This is a CBC podcast.
CBC podcasts are supported by HP Print Studio. Express your brand with HP Print Studio. Find free customized templates to build your business identity, like letterhead, business cards, and shipping labels. Start the journey at www.hp.ca/print.
Hello, and welcome to the Vinyl Cafe podcast. We publish a new podcast every weekend. You can download the latest or subscribe to the Vinyl Cafe podcast at cbc.ca/podcasting. This week, Stephanie gets a job as a waitress.
Stephanie began working at the East River Grill just before Halloween. It was less than minimum wage, but she had heard you could clean up on tips. She thought about getting a real job, maybe doing research for a professor or working in an office. But working in the restaurant meant that she'd have her days free for classes. And how hard could it be to be a waitress? Well, a lot harder than you'd imagine. She almost didn't make it through the first week. Her first night was a disaster. That was the night the kid dropped his retainer into his basket of fries. And no one noticed until Stephanie had cleared the table. And they started freaking out, and she had to dig through the garbage to find it. There she was, not 2 hours on the job, her arms up to the elbows into the greasy waste bucket by the kitchen door, digging around in the remnants of other people's half-eaten meals, when she unexpectedly closed her hand around the slimy retainer, let out a whoop, and then, before I go any further, I should tell you a little about Chef. Every Tuesday morning, Chef would arrive with a new creation, something he had dreamed up that was going to focus the spotlight onto him. Filet of venison in a licorice caramel reduction. Beetroot sherbet. It would go up on the specials board, and by the end of the night, when not one single order had come in, Chef would storm around the kitchen, foaming and spitting and berating the servers for undermining him. A few days later, it'd be off the menu and no one would ever mention it again. That's Chef. Now, where were we? We're Stephanie's first night, the night that Chef had prepared a crayfish tern gumbo with okra and chilies and dewy sausages and a raspberry yogurt finish. Chef had worked on it all week. Mark had talked a reviewer from the Standard into coming, and Chef was bouncing around the kitchen in anticipation. And as he lifted the gumbo off the stove, he was actually humming. He was carrying it across the kitchen to the warming station while Stephanie was on her knees digging in the garbage for the retainer. And when she found it, she... Don't be getting ahead of me. When she found it, she jumped up, swinging her arms in the air over her head. She jumped up, something she wouldn't do today, but it was her first night. And she smashed into Chef, of course, and the gumbo went flying. And if she had known then what she knew now, she would have just gone home. Steffi hadn't had the nerve to say one word to Chef before that moment, not one word. But she was talking now. Sorry, sorry, Stephanie said as Chef let out a wail. Sorry, 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 she said as Chef picked up the pot and threw it down again. Chef was picking up the pot and throwing it down, and Stephanie was down on her knees picking up the crayfish. When Chef stopped throwing the pot and said, "Let me help you." And he took a handful of crayfish from her, and he began hurling them around the kitchen. Steffi didn't know what she should do. And suddenly Chef went still, and he squatted down on the floor, and he lowered his hand sadly into a pool of the gumbo. And squatting there, he began to cry, which was far worse than when he was yelling. Any other night, she might have been fired on the spot. But they needed her that night, so they couldn't fire her. And so she got another shift. And she came back, and Thinking back on it, she couldn't believe it when she thought about it now. That second night, the night she came back determined to make amends, determined to do something nice for the chef, she walked right behind the serving line, which is the stainless steel counter with the heat lamps that divides the servers from the cooking staff. She actually went behind the line and handed Chef an envelope. And she said, "I thought you might like one of my favorite recipes." Everyone says it's one of the best tomato sauces they've ever tasted. And I don't think there's enough basil in yours. She was trying to reach out. Chef stared at her for a long time, and then he turned around. She was staring at his back when he said, "Get out of my kitchen." And that would have been it for Stephanie. Except Robin took her under her wing. Robin says, "She's okay, I'll train her." Robin taught her everything. Turned out Stephanie wasn't supposed to even talk to Chef. Stephanie wasn't supposed to talk to any of the cooks behind the line. And she certainly wasn't supposed to go behind the line. "Are you kidding?" said Robin. "Never, never go behind the line. Unless you have a death wish." When things were hopping in there, there could be five servers working out front. All of them with five or six tables each. At an average of four people per table, that's a possible 120 meals with problems. All of them have to be solved in the right sequence. And that's the pivot's job. You took your orders to the pivot. The pivot called them out. Pivot was like an air traffic controller. Stephanie teamed up with Robin in Section 1 for a week, which is what should have happened at the very beginning. Robin has worked in the industry for years. She's a lifer. "It's one of the toughest jobs in the world," said Robin at the end of Stephanie's first week. The grill was closed. There were no customers left. They were sitting in Robin's section, table 2, right in front of the fireplace. Best table in the house. They were polishing off a 65 bottle of Californian Zinfandel that table 5 hadn't finished. Robin topped off their glasses. It was Robin who showed Stephanie the ropes. It was Robin who sat beside her at the staff table and taught her to roll cutlery. The two of them sitting there beside Chef's office with a big pile of napkins in front of them. Knife, fork, fold, roll. Knife, fork, fold, roll. Stephanie learned everything from Robin. Even the Sullivan nod, a subliminal technique developed by a restaurant consultant named Tom Sullivan. He came up with it as a method to increase appetizer sales. "Does it really work?" asked Stephanie. "Not all the time," said Robin. "But a lot of the time, it's been proven. You use it to upsell. You use it to increase the bill. If they choose apple pie for dessert," said Robin, "you say, 'Would you like ice cream or cheese with that?'" Robin nodded her head as she said cheese, because cheese costs more. Then she did it again. "Would you like ice cream or cheese?" Her head bobbing up and down, almost imperceptibly. "Just a little nod," she said. "Sometimes they nod right along with you." "Don't you feel guilty?" said Stephanie. "Honey," said Robin, peering at the empty bottle of Zinfandel and shaking her head sadly, "we get paid $5.95 an hour. Bigger bill means a bigger tip. Besides, they want the cheese. They just don't want it to be their fault." Robin got Stephanie over the hump, and slowly Stephanie was accepted, or more to the point, neglected. By Christmas, she was doing 3 shifts a week, and unlike the other temps, she never missed a shift. She showed up, and she kept her head down. The job got into her bones. At Christmas dinner back home, she found herself saying, "Can I get you anything else?" She would dream about it. Chef slamming the bell, pivot calling out orders, everyone running about. Once she woke up in the middle of the night and she was standing beside the kitchen table in her apartment holding a pitcher of water. And now, today was her last day. Exams were over. She was going home on Monday. Home where she would have to decide about a job for the summer. Maybe she'd go tree planting again. Maybe she'd go with Becky to Banff. She had to decide. And she was tired of being asked about what she was going to do. She was tired of not having an answer. Breakfast that day was slow, but lunch was frantic. Steffi got a family with four small children. She was headed for the kitchen as the children and their parents plumped through the front door. By the time she got to their table, two of the children were already tearing apart sugar packets, and the baby in the high chair had launched her sippy cup across the room. Her name was Harmony, and she was 2 years old, and the great pleasure in her life was dropping things from her high chair onto the floor. Cutlery, her napkin, the salt shaker. She had plenty of things to drop. Her mother kept handing them to her. When Harmony got her meal, spaghetti and meat sauce. Exactly. She started flinging handfuls of spaghetti. And the lady at table 28 was snapping her fingers at Stephanie. When Stephanie got to her, the lady was staring at her plate. Stephanie stood beside her and stared too. She let a beat pass, and then another, the two of them staring at the plate mutely. She would have waited her out, but over at 26, one of the boys had crawled under the high chair, and Stephanie could see him unscrewing the lid from the ketchup bottle. Yes, said Stephanie. This, said the lady, isn't a chicken breast. Stephanie blinked at the chicken breast. Chicken breasts, said the woman, have bones. There are no bones. It's boneless, said Stephanie. Exactly, said the woman. Stephanie cleared her throat and tried again. She said, it's supposed to be boneless. She threw in a Sullivan nod for good measure. The lady's lip curled. The lady started to raise her voice. What do you take me for? Do you take me for an idiot? There's no such thing as a boneless chicken. Stephanie picked up the plate and said, I'll tell Chef. Andy was the pivot that Saturday afternoon. Andy was standing in front of the line opposite the fry man and the grill man. Andy said, up on 14, up on 12. And then he looked at Stephanie and said, you're kidding, right? Stephanie shook her head. Andy said, I need two fries, to the fry man. And then he turned to Stephanie. She wants bones? Stephanie nodded. Chef walked over and said, what's the matter? Chef had spent the afternoon deboning and butterflying all the chicken. You don't need to know this, said Andy. Chef frowned. Andy shrugged and held the plate out. She wants bones, he said. Chef glared at Stephanie. Stephanie said, not me, the lady. Chef didn't say a word, but his face began to change color. She wants bones, he whispered. Stephanie wished he would just yell. Instead, he grabbed his hair and he began to hop around in a circle, pulling at his hair. And now everyone in the kitchen was staring at Stephanie as if she had done something wrong. She was about to explain, but then she remembered the family at table 26, and she bolted. The father was waving the bill impatiently in the air when she went through the kitchen doors. And Harmony? Harmony was holding her spaghetti-smeared doll over the edge of her chair, and she was grinning evilly. As soon as she saw Stephanie, she let the doll go, and she started to cry. And something inside Stephanie snapped. She walked over to the table, pretending she hadn't seen the doll fall, and she ground her foot into the doll's face. Harmony gasped. Oh, my goodness, said Stephanie, lifting her foot. I am so sorry. 10 minutes later, as Harmony was being carried out, Stephanie and the little girl locked eyes over her father's shoulder. Harmony glared at her. Stephanie stuck out her tongue. And that was only lunch. At supper, the touchpad on the screen in Peter's station misaligned. Mysteriously, the touch function shifted one item to the left, which meant every time Peter touched hamburger on his display, it came out as salmon steak on the Pivots printer. Of course, no one noticed this right away. It took about an hour to figure it out, and by then, Chef was moving from his chopping block to the stove, weeping noisily. Pamu, the dishwasher, was sitting glumly on the edge of the sink, eating fries. And even Andy, unflappable Andy, the pivot, was leaning against the heat lamps with his head buried in his hands, refusing to talk to anybody. The kitchen had ground to a halt. Peter was beside himself. The people in Peter's section were beside themselves. We're in the weeds now, said Robin, as she and Stephanie waited in front of the line. It was Andy who pulled it all together. Andy began to yank orders from the cooking station, put everyone's orders on hold as the cooks scrambled to catch up in Peter's section. It was a logical move, but it meant that pretty soon all the other servers were on edge too. And of course, it was one of the busiest Saturday nights in weeks. Before long, everyone was shouting. Servers were screaming at Andy. Andy was screaming at Chef, and Chef was screaming at everyone. Orders were appearing so fast there was no room for them under the heat lamps. Andy was yelling, pick up 13, pick up 12, pick up 21. Come on, pick up, pick up, pick up. There's no way of describing what it's like in a kitchen when you're in the weeds. There was smoke hovering in the air from the grill and tempers and sweat and grease and the smell of fear and all of it, everything, mixed up with a fine spray coming out of Pamu's dish pit. And that meant the tiles were getting slippery and you couldn't walk safely. Only way to get from the dining room to the line to pick up your orders was to skate across. By the end of the night, people were balancing their plates in one hand and using the other to grab onto racks and trolleys to keep themselves upright. You would skate into the kitchen, into all that screaming, and start screaming yourself, and then you'd walk out carrying an order as if everything back there was calm and beautiful. Stephanie flew wordlessly from table to table, from bar to kitchen, as if she were some kind of manic wind-up doll. She picked up orders and she set down drinks in a blur. She scraped spaghetti out of high chairs and plucked soggy napkins off the floor and she wiped melted ice cream off the tables. She smiled when she didn't feel like smiling and she said, enjoy your meal, when she really meant, why can't you people eat at home? On the way past the bar, she scooped up ice cubes and dropped them down the back of her blouse to stay cool, like Robin had shown her. I hate fresh ground pepper, said Robin as she swept past Stephanie. She was juggling three enormous plates in one hand and a pepper grinder the size of a baseball bat in the other. By midnight, Stephanie was sitting in the kitchen at the staff table, her eyes glazed and her jaw slack. She was exhausted, but she was unable to stop moving. Her section had emptied first, and now she was folding napkins, doing roll-ups for the last time ever. She had no idea what she'd be doing next month, let alone next week. She was sitting there, her feet aching, but she didn't dare take off her shoes because she knew she wouldn't be able to get them back on. Her calves hurt, and her knees hurt. She looked up. Huh? Robin was standing there. Stephanie realized she had stopped folding. She hadn't folded anything for a good 5 minutes. She'd been sitting there staring at, who knows, completely lost in thought. Robin sat down. Your last night, she said. How does it feel? I don't know, said Stephanie. It was the truth. chef appeared at the table. "Here," he said, plucking a plate of ravioli in front of each of them. And then he headed back behind the line. Robin raised an eyebrow at Stephanie. "I think that means you're welcome back in September," she said. Stephanie nodded. "What are you doing when you get home?" asked Robin, reaching for a roll-up. "I don't know," said Stephanie. "I wish people would quit asking. Maybe tree planting, maybe Banff." Robin nodded. "What about next year?" "I don't know," Stephanie snapped. Then she looked up across the table ruefully. "Sorry," she said. "It's just, you know, I always thought I was going into law. And now I don't know anymore. When are you supposed to know what's right for you anyway? I don't know what's right anymore." Robin smiled. "But you do know you don't want to work in a restaurant." Stephanie shook her head. "I never thought I did." "Me neither," said Robin. "But it turns out I'm good at it, and I happen to like it." "You're super good," said Stephanie. "But how do you figure that out?" "You don't," said Robin. "It just happens." Stephanie got up and got a pitcher from the counter and brought it back to the table. She poured them both a glass of water. "But everyone keeps asking me like I'm at some kind of crossroad," she said. "I feel so pressured." "Listen," said Robin, leaning forward. "Here's a secret. There are no crossroads. There's not even a road. It's a carnival. And there's a lot of booths. And you can come and you can go and you can try out as many as you want. And one day you're going to notice you've been hanging around one of the booths because you like it there." Stephanie was nodding. But Robin wasn't finished. "So you can come back in September or not. And you can go to Banff or not. The only thing you have to do is stop fretting. Stop trying to figure it out. You can't figure it out. No one can figure it out. And if they tell you any different, they're lying. Trust your heart. Follow your feet. And you'll know when you get there." They stared at each other over that half-finished ravioli. And neither of them said anything. Until Stephanie nodded and said, "Thank you." And they stared a little longer. And Stephanie added, "I'm going to miss you." "Well," Robin said, pointing at her plate, "you can come here for dinner anytime you feel like it. On one condition, of course." "What's that?" said Stephanie. Robin stood up and smiled. "You have to leave me a good tip."
That's Stuart McLean, and that's from the Vinyl Cafe. Stuart McLean and the Vinyl Cafe will be heading out on tour this autumn. They'll be doing live Vinyl Cafe concerts in British Columbia, Ontario, Quebec, and the United States. They'll be making stops in Kelowna, Nanaimo, Duncan, Trail, Vernon, Prince George, Terrace, Kamloops, Abbotsford, Montreal, Kingston, Huntsville, North Bay, Sudbury, Chatham, Indianapolis, Indiana, Cleveland, Ohio, Mount Clemens, Michigan, and Seattle, Washington. You can log on to the Vinyl Cafe website for a complete list of shows. You can find the Vinyl Cafe on the web at vinylcafe.com.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.